All right, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Raw Knowledge Podcast with your host, as ever, myself, Alex Connor. And today, for the viewers on YouTube, something a little bit different, So a lot of people asked me a while ago, Alex, why were you dressed pretty much naked, covered in gold?
Not naked, just gold.
Just golden, full golden. Well, the answer to that question is my guest today, Tracy Eaton.
Hello, everybody.
Thank you for joining me.
Anytime.
I appreciate it. Now, I'm sure for the viewers and if anyone has tuned into that episode, they might be putting the pieces together. But as ever, I always like to start with who you are, what you do, and most importantly, why you do it. So give us a bit of a rundown.
Who I am? I have been a professional artist now for about 5 or 6 years, but painting for nearly 15 years. I specialise in acrylic and mixed media. For those of you may not care about that, but I love acrylic because it's super colourful, it's super vibrant, and it dries really quickly, and I'm inherently quite impatient, so oils would do my head in. I've been selling on the international stage for around about 13 years now, so that's been pretty exciting for me. Want to continue to grow that, of course. And Alex, I met you a few years back when we did a first partial body paint on you, doing a torso for cancer.
Cancer, that's right.
And then, of course, painting you gold to represent the Oscar, because of the last 3 years, I've had an exclusive commission where I have painted paintings for all of the nominees for the Oscars. So hence why you needed to be an Oscar for when I was actually at the auction and launching them. So,
and that was tremendously fun. And I'd always want to go to the Oscars, you know. And
it's kind of the same.
I know, I'm like, can I take that off my bucket list? Well, I was an Oscar. I'm like, it doesn't get better than that.
I think it's closer than most people will ever get to go into the Oscars.
Most people will never attend. Most people will never win one. But whoever gets to be
one.
Come on. Even, we're looking at
a little statue to, like, you know, not a podium to put you on. And I should have done that. That would have been cool.
That actually would have been cool. That would have been the most valuable Oscar, perhaps.
That would have been cool.
Could have auctioned me and Jess off.
Exactly.
Which would have been fun, I'm sure. I want to go back to the start.
Sure.
Because I like to kind of unpack, you know, I like to talk about people's journey. And I think that's really important because it builds a picture and it tells us more about, you know, who you are, what you do, specifically in more of a three-dimensional approach.
Of course.
So was there any specific events when you were younger that got you into painting, got you into art? Was there a person? Was it an inspiration? And it might not be. But what was like the protagonist which led you to the path which is now?
Exactly. I have always been really creative. So I can't tell as a child any one moment where I'm going, oh my God, I need to be an artist. Because it was never actually, it was just who I was. It was never a lot like, yes, I'm going to be an artist for my life, for like, that's my job. Wasn't going to happen. Just didn't even think about it. And I remember doing photography at high school, which I adored. And that was way back when we were actually in the dark room and, you know, bringing it all to life, you know, practically and traditionally, which was super cool, not digital. And then I also started doing art when I came over to Australia for a student exchange years ago. And the art teacher at the time told me I would never be an artist. Sorry, honey, you're just not good enough to be an artist. Oh my God, I was 15 and I'd only ever done one painting. But anywho,
Shoot a kid's dream down.
Yeah. No, it's like hello. But they didn't put me off. But I was just like, oh well, whatever. I hadn't really changed who I was in any way. But I did go into the health sector, so I became an occupational therapist, and fell in love with colour even more. And I think if it was going to be a pivotal moment in my life where I decided that I had to use colour in some way to help create kind of change in people's lives, it was that. We were doing a training, we were told about an exercise done with children who, I said this at the event, who'd been blind from birth. So they had no conscious awareness of colour. Just throughout that example or that exercise, every kid was draped with a silk scarf. The scarf was a different colour, but the same fabric. Every child described blue in the same way, red in the same way, green in the same way. So they, you know, blue, for example, was cold. Red, they felt like it was fire or, you know, energised. Not that it was a kid saying energised, but, you know. So that, to me, was the beginning of my passion of colour. So then I delved even further into understanding more about the psychology of colour and why it impacts us so much. And for those of you who are science-based, there is something analytical with this, because colour is light. Mm. Light is vibration. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily have to see something to feel it. So that's why the children were able to feel the difference between yellow and blue, because blue is a lower vibration and yellow is a higher and faster vibration.
Makes sense.
So they were feeling the vibration. So colour in itself is immense. So a long-winded reason, an example is to say why I'm doing what I'm doing. Mm. I had to be immersed in using colour to help people unlock what they were good at, or to talk, or to create some change, like I said, in their life. And colour produces emotion. So when I worked in as an OT, I worked in pediatrics and forensic psych, two very different fields, yet I used colour and art therapy in both. And both times people would share things with me that I think they didn't expect, or by engaging them in a creative process, I would get them to open up and to talk and to just relax. So I knew from then that art and colour was going to be part of my world. What I didn't foresee was that it was my entire world. So, because after that I went into the corporate sector, into sales, yes. Corporate sales, and running my own company. And the switch for me was when I had a very significant burnout, and I remember quitting my job, and I walked out of there going, oh, a girl needs to go shopping to feel better. So sorry.
That's all. Good ringtone.
Yeah, thank you. I went shopping to feel better, walked past an art store, and I swear I would have bought the store. I was watching, and I went, I need to paint. I just, more than anything in my life, felt that I needed to paint.
And you don't mind me asking, how old were you at this point?
I was 32.
Right.
33.
Yeah.
So I'd spent years kind of on the fringes and using colour in my life and in my work, but not... I always say I didn't take it seriously. I think what the problem was is that I wasn't ready to be an artist.
Yeah.
Because to be an artist meant embracing all parts of who I was, showing my vulnerability, and also being prepared for people to go, oh my God, that's crap. Mm. I don't like that. Well, what are you doing? So there's a whole raft of things that I think I needed to get my head around, or emotionally to get my head around, subconsciously anyway, and then consciously before I could do this full time. And then it kind of just hit me in the face and went, okay, this is what you're doing. And that was it. There was no turning back.
Like, you make a valid point there about, you know, perhaps you weren't ready for it.
Mm.
Art, and this is partly some of my interpretation, comes from your own experience.
Oh, so much.
So perhaps you could argue that, and I'm not saying that they can't be young artists, but if you have a world or a plethora of experience to draw from, it's like, I'm going to use a parallel that perhaps I might understand more, to perhaps compare it to like music.
Mm.
If you're going to create and write music, now as a young person, you can create and write music, but generally the lyrics are not...
There's no real heart yet.
No, where if, say, someone is writing a love song and they've seen a bit of life experience, and there's no necessarily age to depict that, but it could be someone who's in their later 20s, 30s, etc., you sort of get a sense of that there's a little bit more intention behind it. There's a little bit more clout. There's more emotion. So perhaps could that be the same with the art, where you were at a point where it's like, well, now I not only understand it perhaps more and you can connect with it, but I could create something that... like you said, skin off your nose, as whether people are going to like it or not, but something where you could take your life experience, and you could put it into a piece and go, well, I can go somewhere with this. You have experience to draw for, you have a palette of which to paint with.
I do. I think it goes even further than that, though, because I think I've always been someone who was pretty driven and very critical upon myself and my actions and my ability to achieve. Like, I had to be... the best. I had to do the best that I could, right? And there is obviously still a part of me of that now.
Yeah, for sure.
However, I believe as an artist, that is the one time that it's so healing, because that creative process, I was talking actually to a racing car driver, so bear with me, I will come back to what I was going to say.
Oh, no, this is good.
A racing car driver, and when we met, I know both of us at the same time were like, we've got nothing in common. You race cars, I paint pictures, like seriously. Until we started talking. And very quickly we both realized that his genius zone lies in when he's behind that wheel. And my genius zone lies in creating pieces of art. But for us to get to that point, there's a whole raft of things that need to happen. And one of the some of the most important things is that we need to let go of judgment, and that's normally self-judgment more than anything else. We need to let go of expectation. So there is no emotional attachment associated with that process, because that's where expectation comes from. And we need to completely trust ourselves. And the moment we both realize that, and we both had these little activities that we go through to get to that point. But as an artist, for me, I had to wholeheartedly embrace all of that to really start to fully create. And I think, and I know that he was the same. So coming back to me not being ready, yes, I have a wealth of experience and life experience and knowledge as well. But more than that, I know that I trust myself enough to allow myself to let go. So there's no thinking in this. When he's racing, he's not thinking. He's in his zone. For me, I believe that it's channeling whatever's going to come through, whatever words you want to use. Mm. If you, same thing, you do physical stuff, you're a sports person. Mm. For us to get really, really good at anything, we need to completely let go.
Yeah, you have to immerse
yourself
in it.
And that's a tough thing for a lot of people to do. And it's a tough thing for me to do sometimes, especially you're on a deadline or you've got a budget or, you know, it's like, oh my God, I've got these paintings that are due in this amount of however many weeks. You've got to make it happen. You have to turn it on.
Mm.
So it's an interesting one.
It is. And that's probably a really good avenue to talk about, like the flow and getting in the flow state. This is probably a really deep rabbit hole as well. And there's a lot of things that kind of come with it as well.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you some tools, tips and techniques that you use. But sure. I can relate, because I was actually saying before that I used to race. That was my thing. I was very fortunate. I got the opportunity to do that all around New Zealand.
So you get that.
And funnily enough, we just went go-karting recently, and that kind of brought that all back up to me. And a lot of the guys were like, oh, you didn't want to do it. And I'm like, look, guys, it's a big part of my heart, and I want to do it, and I'd love to be able to fund it again. And my dad gave me the best opportunity he could. But it's hard, it's mini Formula One, it's finance, and I did it all over New Zealand. So I'd love to be able to give back one day and actually fund perhaps other people's racing opportunities, but then also my own endeavors. And to kind of bring it back, how can it be relaxing when you're going, you know, that fast in a car, that close to the ground, but it is therapeutic. Now, not to everybody, but to me, that is a flow state.
In your zone.
Yeah, and it's the same when I'm riding my bike, and it's weird. For me, it's like I don't think, it's autonomous.
Yep.
So that for me is obviously something that helps me get into that state. You're right.
Sorry, I was getting hot, but not. Sorry, can't.
That's all good. You got it?
Yep. Sorry, people.
Still there.
Creative That's moment, good. So you don't think. That's Carry it. On.
All good. So it was like but for one other person, it can be, again, completely different. So like you said, you can be parallels apart in a world, but...
So many similarities.
Exactly.
So I call it my procrastination activity. And it wasn't until speaking with Luke that I realized there was no procrastination at all. It was actually the beginning of my process to get into the zone. And for me, it can be as simple as cleaning my studio. So you ask anyone, when I'm in the throes of creating, nothing is cleaned. I'll literally squeeze the paint out and throw it on the floor. And I'll finish whatever body of work I'm doing or a painting, and I will walk into the studio and go, holy shit, that needs some work. Like it's chaos.
Yeah.
But before I start that, it's the complete opposite. Everything has to be in its place. I tidy up, I mix my paint, I decide, you know, I spend probably a good 40 to 45 minutes getting into the zone, and then I go for it. I'm always nervous that first brush stroke on a brand new canvas. I'm like, oh, can I do this? And away I go.
And then it all comes.
And I think that's a great thing, because if we lose that, then I think we lose our humbleness and our ability to be grounded and to be in touch and connect with people.
Yeah.
So I think it's important that continues.
Yeah, I think there's got to be some element to that, because otherwise if you don't care, if you don't have that still, have I got it? I get a little bit nervous, butterflies. It's arguably, it doesn't give you the buzz.
It's like when you walk on stage, right? I enjoy public speaking, and I used to do theatre. So I always have that little moment of like butterflies, nervousness, and then you go. And I think it's exactly the same thing.
Yeah, and it means you care. Yeah. I often say that to people when they say, oh, Alex, I'm nervous about this and that. And I said, but it's good. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, because you care about it.
Exactly.
And I use another example from when I was racing, because I used to race. There was a gentleman who, he raced trials bikes in New Zealand. And he was he's mad. You know, this guy, the crazy. And his dad pulled him out of it because he almost died.
Oh.
And which is fair enough. But so his dad's like, we can go go-karting. It's still extreme sport, but you know. And he was very good, on the edge the whole time. And I'm like, dude, I'm like, you're just fearless. And he's like, Alex, this is boring.
Yeah, he was looking for the next rush too.
Yeah, and it's weird. So we end up going back to it when he got old enough, he funded it himself and his dad sort of gave in. But it was so weird because I said, are you not having a good time? Like, you do really well, you're very fast, you know? And he says, Alex, I'm so numb. Like, he says, I don't dislike it, but it's nothing like riding a bike for me. And it's weird because those two things are very, well, they're in the same theme, if you know what I mean, to a degree. You're still motor racing of some sort. But for him, it was just day and night. There was no thrill, and he just wanted to get back to it, where I thought, fuck, you're on the edge, mate. Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Each to their own.
Yeah, and he got no nervousness. No, he goes, I'm not nervous, I'm not excited, I'm just... And that's why he probably just pinned it all the time, because he wanted to feel something.
He was looking
something.
For the next. Yeah, he was looking for the next edge. He was totally rushing on adrenaline.
Correct. You mentioned something before about you said you used to do colour therapy.
Yep.
Yeah. Can you talk to me about how
colour psychology?
Colour psychology
and art therapy. Yeah.
And art therapy.
Yep.
How can you talk us through how that works? I'm quite interested.
Sure. So I wrote a book actually a couple of years ago to explain it, because not everybody is interested in the psychology of why we engage the colour in certain...
Hang on.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, I'm just going to say, just in case.
And so there you
pop
go.
Pop it out and then make sure it's there. And then let your top come up a little bit. I just want to make sure that it's... there you go. Good. Yeah.
Good?
Fine. Yeah. Just in case. I'm sure it will be, but it was on your skin.
Done.
And I'm like,
Done. Not many people are interested in not everyone, sorry, is interested in why we resonate with certain colours and why we don't. But I think it's important for us to understand. So can imagine, actually you don't even have to imagine, the UK and New Zealand, right? Two of the rainiest, greyest, coldest places. Oh, maybe Scotland as well, actually. That's pretty much up there too. But both of those places have something called SAD disease, seasonal affective disorder. It's a real thing.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yep. And you think about it, with the time that that's happening, one, there's no vitamin D from the sun, I get that. But also, you think about how grey the world is every single day. In the corporate sector, the majority of the wall colours are grey and white. No colour, not stimulating, it's very depressing. And that is part of the problem, right? Because if we live in a space devoid of colour, our energy becomes lower, our mood becomes flatter, nothing is there to stimulate or to get us out of the headspace that we're in, I guess. So for me, when I was using art as therapy, or colour more specifically really as therapy, I couldn't care what someone drew, it's not about that. It was more about finding the things that they resonated with, or the colour they resonated with, to unlock what they were feeling or thinking. So for an example, I used to work with kids with ADHD. And one kid, he would come into my therapy room, and he would trash the joint. Like, he was just, not intentionally, he was just chaotic. Like, he was everywhere, right? So if he walked in right now and there was orange and red, it would just send him over the edge, because that's a really hot, this is actually good, this is a good example.
We've done well.
Yeah, we have, because it's such a high energy colour. That if you are high energy already, you probably find you don't resonate that well, or if you do, it'll be for this amount of time, and then you'd be like, too much.
Yeah.
And what people tend to look for then is blues and greens, because it's softer. So he would walk in and he would just be chaos. So we'd sit down and we'd start creating. And he always, always went for blue. First time, every time. So I just let him kind of do his thing, and what I found over a period of time is that he made less and less mess when he was creating all those times. So he was a lot more controlled. By the end of the hour with me, he was calmer, he was actually having real conversations as opposed to just two-second manic discussions, and I was kind of like, okay, so this is really cool. Same thing when I worked in the forensic area. I didn't really want to encourage bright social, like hardcore colours, but there was one guy there who, he was quite depressed. So I found it was the complete opposite. He already trusted me. So blue is a trusting colour. as well. We know it. It's the sky. It's the ocean. We know what blue is. We believe it and we feel it.
Yeah.
And we also feel quite nurtured by blue as well because of that. So I knew that he already had that as a base with me, but I'd, you know, we'd start creating. It sounds crazy sitting there in a prison pouring paint and doing with people, but it was interesting.
I think it's important.
But I found the colours that unlocked him was yellow because it was joyful and happy and optimistic. And that's what he started to feel when he was surrounded with that sort of colour. So it was great. It was interesting for me learning to see how people would react. So even now when I'm painting, people will walk up to some pieces and like there was a black and white painting they did called Pure Balance. I didn't find it evil at all, It was to me it was perfectly balanced, hence the name. And it was also about realizing that we all have great bits and not so great bits about us, like, and understanding the good and the dark is, you know, good and bad is okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I was at this particular exhibition and a woman who I'd been speaking to off and on throughout the evening, she came up to me, she's like, I don't understand. I'm like, what do you mean? And she's like, well, you're a really nice person. How can you create such an evil, dark painting? I was like, oh my God, show me this painting. I need to see this. So she took me to this black and white one. Now, colour has a positive and a negative polarity as well, right? So we either resonate well or we don't, depending on where we're at the time.
Mm.
So black can be something that is great for protection and confidence, but it also can be perceived as really controlling and secretive and overpowering as opposed to powerful. And that's what she was feeling. So when she saw this black and white painting, all that she saw was this over the sense of someone trying to control her and overpower her. And I was like, and we do it again. So, and I should know, like I do know, consciously understand her colour. Another example for you.
Yeah, no, this is really fascinating.
We've all been through bad, some not so good, a lot of us have been through some bad stuff. So there was a period in my life where there were some things that weren't so flash, and I hated pink. I've always hated pink for many, many years, and pink many years.
Pink can piss off.
Pretty much. But now I'm surrounded by it, right? So, pink is an interesting colour because traditionally, and I'm going to go right back to explain why, but pink was created to soften men, like boys, because pink is red and white, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, so blue was created for girls, but pink was created for men, for boys.
Oh, good. We want to go into there this. There you go. Actually,
so, yeah. This is good. Anywho, so pink also is all about universal love and self-love. So it's a colour that really pulls out the action-based component of red, but also the real softness and openness of white. So it merges the two.
Right. Makes sense.
Anywho, so I was asked to create a piece for a charity, which is all about survivors or homelessness and survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence.
Hmm.
I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. So I was like, oh, the perfect colour tones would be purples, pinks, whites and silvers. Like, that's a no-brainer. It had to happen. So I started painting away. And over the period of a couple of days, I got progressively more and more unhappy, grumpy, agitated, so much so that by day three, I literally threw my brushes down. I was like, oh my God, I burst into tears and I couldn't figure out what was going on. So I chucked another canvas down on the table and I grabbed the first colour that I resonated with, which was yellow. It's not surprising. And I literally was just pouring yellow and green all over this canvas. The painting was disgusting as an aside, but anyhow, it wasn't the point. The point was, after that, I felt a lot better and I sat down, I was like, what's going on? And then it hit me. The reason that I didn't like pink was because my levels of self-love was far too low to be resonating positively with that colour. But I was forcing it. By painting in so much of that colour, I was forcing myself to actually deal with whatever had to be dealt with.
Yeah.
So I did. The next day, I woke up, I'm like, I've got this. And sure enough, I was fine. And literally ever since then, pink hasn't been a problem. And in fact, I went through a phase of, I had pink nail polish, I bought some pink toth. Everything was just fabulously pink because it was all about self-love.
Right.
So it is a thing, whether we consciously believe or accept it or not, it is a thing because of the vibrational levels that we're putting off. And as I said earlier, that's what we resonate with.
Yeah. Mm. So is it fair to say then that we can have a positive and a negative association Absolutely. With the colour depending on where we are at? Yeah, right I'm just now. Trying to interpret yep. it. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. That's...
Right now, which is exactly why the pink example doesn't affect me now, like because I'm in a different emotional space.
Mm. I imagine as an artist, that gives you a real edge then, because you can.
I think so.
Because you can interpret it so much better, but perhaps not even that. With the example of the lady who said, "How could you paint her? They're so evil." You could perhaps even begin to interpret it to her.
I can. If somebody is interested in that, I absolutely will have those discussions with them, hence the book. So I gift that to people or, you know, when,
yeah,
whatever. But if they don't want to know, it's fine too. But what gives me the greatest pleasure is you coming back to why I do what I do.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah,
I paint. I paint to create change. I always have. And the more people who know about me, the more visible I am, the more people who are seeing and buying artwork, the more change I can create. And I have to say, I have the utmost admiration and respect for musicians because they can write and play a song, and it's sent out in a relatively short space of time to millions.
Correct.
Love that. So I guess for me, I paint the way I paint, and I paint, in fact, because it's healing and it brings joy to people. And those two things together create change. That's why I paint.
I love that. That's great. And that's a real deep meaning, you know, it has a lot of authenticity behind it, but it's
Very
something
much.
That I don't think a lot of people would imagine when they speak to an artist or someone who paints, etc. But then again, you know, people have different interpretations of different things in life, and we always make assumptions, and there's probably a lot of stereotypes
With artists.
Perhaps
of course there is.
They're all alcoholics.
Like alcoholics, drug addicts, which I actually understand, just saying, because when I'm really struggling to get into my zone, the first thing I think about is a Baileys and vodka. I said it at my event, Baileys and vodka together, that's my drink of choice. And it works.
I just got the special edition red velvet one the other day.
I haven't tried that yet.
It's good.
Yeah.
I've tried all the flavors. Oh, no, I tell a lie. There's one that I've not, and salted caramel apparently is the best. It's always sold out. And it's funny because this lady always serves me at the Rubino. I sound like an alcoholic, don't I? People are like, what do you mean this lady was?
No,
anyway,
hey, it's not just
technically,
me.
Yeah. Just balance, right?
It's okay. It's good.
It's good.
I'm up with it.
The clients
we can
are
do
like,
this together.
Exactly, right? At the end of the day, it's that my name is Alex and I'm an alcoholic. That's why I'm here. But she said to me, she goes, you had this one yet? I said, no, I've not tried. She goes, did you have the strawberry one? I said, I had it. She goes, it's better. I said, why? She goes, that one was too sweet. This is just right. And she's not wrong.
I haven't tried the strawberry because I didn't think it was going to be too sweet.
Yeah, it is a bit. But go with the chocolate. The coffee one is phenomenal. Chocolate's very rich, I would say. Not sweet. It is sweet, but it's rich, but worth a go. But the red velvet is just...
I don't know if you can break my habit. I don't know. If I have a different drink, what am I going to create?
Oh, you still got the standard. No, it's still Baileys.
Okay.
No, it's Baileys, different flavours.
I know, but...
Oh, the original one. Yeah, we'll just always have a bottle of original and then that one as well.
Just in case.
Yeah, exactly.
Try that. No, I don't like that one. I'll go back to this one.
So, funny story. As an aside, so when I first started actually training at EMF, I was doing, you know, sort of all hours, as you've got to do to build your reputation. And I used to train a few clients really early for my liking. And I remember I was like, I wanted a coffee, but at the time, you know, you weren't sort of walk around with a coffee cup, and I didn't want to do
that.
So I
had a Baileys.
So I actually...
You did.
So yeah, I did. So I put, but in my flask, what I started to do is I put my coffee, instant coffee in the morning, because I couldn't afford to have a coffee back then every day. So, and then I'd like chuck the Baileys in to make it sweeter, and then a little bit of milk and the rest hot water. And there was this massive flask. And my client one day, she goes, are you drinking Baileys? And I was just like, I may have Baileys in my coffee. She's like, you're the best coach ever. And I'm like, yeah. Like, yes. It was like 5 a.m. in the morning. And I do hear
that. There has been a couple of times when I have rung my husband 8 o'clock in the morning, and I'm on deadline, and I've got this. Mm. I've got to produce.
Baileys is good anytime.
Oh, it is. I've rang him. He's like, so babe, is it like too early for me to start drinking yet?
Just put it in a coffee. It'd be fine.
But coming back to stereotypes, right?
Yes.
I don't think artists are alone. I think every industry has a stereotype.
Exactly.
But you are right that
a lot of people perceive artists to be slightly left of centre, a bit random, a bit quirky, and you know what? We kind of are. And I have to say that I spent years fighting that.
Fun
that
and creative.
Yes.
But so are musicians a lot of the time.
All I can see us because
they're my
artists.
Favourite people.
Artists, musicians, writers, we're all artists. We just do different things.
Yeah.
We're all the same terms of the creative space.
All a bit. You have to be, though. But you have to be a bit articulate and eccentric.
Well, I heard someone on the radio the other day, and I apologize, I can't remember her name, a new musician. And what I loved, she said, you know, to be an artist, it's kind of like we feel everything way high or way low. There's no in-betweens with us. And I think that is what makes us so unique and a bit random and special, because without that depth of emotion, how can we create? How can we write the song? How can we write that book? How can we throw some, I shouldn't say that, I don't just throw paint at a canvas.
Some people think that's true.
How can we bring to life something that didn't exist before?
Mm.
Like you said, it comes from us, so we have to be intensely feeling of everything. But one stereotype I don't like about visual artists is, so when I left my business, I had really distinct schools of camp. Some people were like, oh my God, you are so brave because you are following your passion. You're doing what your heart wants you to do. This is awesome, which I believe. The other school of camp were like, you're freaking mad. You're giving up a successful business to become a starving artist. And that's the stereotype that I don't agree with or believe it. And I feel that there is a lot of artists who buy into that from the time they start art school.
Mm.
It's like, you know, art is hard. So is digital marketing. So is personal training. So is any business. We've all got competitors. It's not even the competitors, actually. You've still got to put in the hard yards to create a business.
That come together with it.
Yeah. So I, if there's the other thing that I could do would be to help artists understand that we don't have to buy into that philosophy.
Mm.
Not saying it's going to be easy, but we don't have to buy into it.
Mm. No, I love that. It's
and you
true.
Can be professional and articulate and well-groomed and present yourself and do things that a business owner would expect when you're talking to them, as opposed to rocking up and going, I'm an artist, I'm a bit crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a crazy artist. I finally admit that, but I'm happily to embrace that because that is part of what makes me me.
And you can break the stereotype too, which is the discussion we had actually. I think we were talking this last time when we were doing the gold painting. And you were saying as well a lot about how a lot of artists, they don't value their own work even as well. And it's almost like it's this,
they don't value themselves enough.
Well, this is true. That's where it stems from. But it's almost like a badge of honor. And like you said, we have it in every industry in the training world. It's the kind of like, got to be like really hardcore, like got to starve myself. It's like, yeah, there's an element of that, but not all the time. Like there's a smarter way to go. So it's like you were saying then, you don't have to play to the traditional stereotype or the ideology
not
of what people
all.
Think. You can still have that element, but you could break the mold and you could do it better.
I've had some interesting discussions in the past with some gallery owners, and one a couple of years back, we were chatting away and it was like, you know, you just have to be careful, Trace. It's like, because I was getting a lot of commercial work. I was getting hotels, and we were doing some big contracts big commissions, which was really exciting.
Yeah.
I said, well, why is that? He's like, well, you have to not sell yourself out, because you need to be able to paint just for the sake of painting. And I said to him, look, I actually agree with you. Ask Wayne, if I haven't painted for a while, I start to get agitated, I start to get restless, and it's just life's just too hard.
Yeah.
I paint and I feel better.
It's an expression.
It's an expression. So I said to him, look, I get that. I do need to paint to create just for the sake of it, but at the same time, I need to put some food on the table. So if you can guarantee that painting just because I can and whatever I feel like painting is going to bring the same amount of income to help feed my family and my lifestyle, sweet, I'll do it. But if you can't guarantee that, I need something that's more solid. So the balance is doing both. Painting just because I feel like it, and which is the exhibitions I have every year, that's the releases I have just because that is me expressing myself, and then balancing that with doing commissions. Perfect.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, that's where there's that whole, oh, you've got it, you've not got to sell out, you've got to stay pure. It's like, yeah, but you've also got to be realistic as well.
Yeah, we live in a life that we have to pay cash for things. We need to, you know, we've got a mortgage to pay like everybody else.
Yeah.
So you've got to be realistic.
I want to ask a few more questions about some of the things in your career. But before that, I must say, I've always been drawn to blue, light blue particularly.
No,
I was just kind of pointing at it as in, sorry, because the color of the mic is similar. Yeah. I love ice blue. I can love it, like with a passion.
Yep.
And I've always disliked red with almost a bit of an anger, which is strange. Like when I was a kid, it was like I didn't like Ferrari. I was like, no, that car can't win, but I love McLaren. It was like silver and black and you know, and exactly. And for me, but it was always been like light. I'm just drawn to light blue. Like it's very strange. And I was just listening to what you were saying before about that. I'm like, I wonder if that's because it's a calming color and I'm quite erratic and passionate and a bit sort of, you know, how you doing? Maybe that calms me down. I don't know. But I just, in my eyes, it's just such a beautiful color. I don't know if there's any other interpretation for that, but I thought I would ask.
We also relate to color or resonate with color based on life experience and culture as well. So don't forget that. So using red as an example, red is considered to be a very passionate, bold action color. It's a masculine energy. So it is a very strong energy. But you hear a lot of people in the past used to say, put red in the bedroom because it's a passion color. And it's all about sexuality and sensuality.
Yes.
But red is also can also make you really angry because it's such a strong action color.
Yeah.
We moved into a house a while ago which had red walls. Within a day, I was like, that shit's got to go. So I put white all over it, got rid of them, job done. So in terms of yourself, there's so many different color tones with red too. So you've got red that could have a black base, so it's quite a dark red. You might resonate differently to that than you would a really bright red, you know, because then it's the black you're also reacting to as well. So if you've had experiences when you were kids or a kid when you were growing up, and I don't know, there would have been, maybe there was a red sofa in the lounge which reminded you of a negative experience, you will also potentially relate negatively to the red as well.
Mm.
Blue, light blue particularly, is all about communication and speaking your truth. So, and yes, it's a very calming color. It's got lots of white, so white's pure. White's all about anything is possible and new opportunities, and blue's trust and nurturing. So, and also a bit of leadership. So if you put the light blue on top of that, because you've got so much white in there, it's very much a soft, open, inviting colour.
Which are my business colours.
There you go. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it's a very feminine energy, so it softens you,
yeah.
Which is probably maybe another reason why you're drawn to it, because like you said, you're a high energy person.
Yeah.
So a lot of people that I particularly met, actually, is another client of mine. He's also very, very high energy. He loves to be surrounded by blue.
Yeah.
But dark blue, but still, it's a blue.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I even had my dad in New Zealand when I was younger. I said, can I have blue lights in my room? And I had blue lights. It's weird, but it was like, yes, everything was blue.
Wayne's the same. My husband's the same. He loves blue.
Yeah, it's such a great colour.
Yeah.
Are there any, and I know we mentioned this last time in our chat, but are there any particular artists, old or new, that have inspired you or that you look to for inspiration? I know you draw a lot of it from yourself, but for example, any of the big names, Michelangelo, Picasso, etc.
Not in terms of technique and what, like I wouldn't paint like they paint, but in terms of their ability just to do whatever they felt is right, I would say Van Gogh was cool, and I would say I don't like Picasso's work, but I like what he stood for, which was his ability to be completely random and unique and not give a shit.
Apparently he used to pay for things with his art.
There you go.
He would like just leave a table and be like,
there you go,
I've done something.
I just drew that.
He literally done something on a plate with food and he's like, that's payment. And he's like, put it on the wall. That's, trust me.
Yeah.
And then like I was like, whoa, like true story.
I love that. And that's what I am more inspired by, behavior as opposed to the technique.
Mm.
Yeah. It's like with musicians. I like people who are completely running their own race.
Yes.
And going to hell with what anybody else thinks. So modern day artists, This is a tough one because you're right. I don't actually have a lot of artists that I am surrounded by, which is interesting again. But I would say that David Bromley has inspired me, particularly of late, because of his ability to be commercial but walk the line of artistic freedom at the same time. And I really like how he's done that, and he values his art well. He's just run his own race, and I like that about him too.
You mentioned then you don't collaborate with, or you don't surround yourself with
other artists. I do collaborate every so often with artists.
Right.
But I know a lot of other artists are immersed in an artistic world, and I've realised actually also only recently that I am not. I have some artists that I know, but I'm surrounded more in a business world, actually, and a world where most of my people that are around me aren't artists. Which I find interesting as well. I have yet to analyse why that is, or maybe I don't even have to bother, it doesn't matter. But I get motivated by people who, as I said before, who just live the way they want to live. I love that. That is more valuable than anything else to me. That's more inspiring to me than anything else.
For sure. Just being, like you said, true to what whoever you want to do.
I don't care what you do, what you get up to, what you look like. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Just do it wholeheartedly.
Do what you actually want to do.
Yeah, and embrace it.
Which is easier said than done.
Oh my God, yes. But it absolutely is. But the people who I am most inspired by, I like that.
Definitely. I resonate with that greatly. You know, it inspires me to be more authentic.
Absolutely.
It's like, no, be, you know, don't try and be... If you like that, and it's A, do A. If you like Z, do Z.
Well, like we were just saying before, I have such a contrast of life. I am, most of my days I'm spent with bare feet. I can't paint in anything but bare feet. Have to have bare feet.
Typical Kiwi.
I know, right? In the middle of winter, my feet are freezing, but I cannot have to.
Anchored that, though.
I'm grounded. I'm fully grounded. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. So I'm either painting in bare feet, or I'm doing an event where I'm dressed looking glamorous. But what we were just saying before, in terms of living your own life and doing it your way, the amount of people who have said to me, you need to always make sure you look 100% immaculate and totally glamorous because you have a glamorous life. I'm like, bullshit, I do. I'm lugging 6-foot pieces of artwork more than I'm not. I'm about to start a commission where I'm painting a wall outside. There's nothing glamorous climbing up
you
and down.
You were covered in paint at the event until you jumped into that about 5 minutes before. And even that, for people who can't see and watch the vlog, that dress is painted. So, you were just covered in paint the whole time.
But the point is, I decided a while ago, no. And Anthony Hopkins, I actually put a thing on my social media the other day. He talked about how you can't live your life trying to get people to love you, basically.
No.
Just do whatever the hell you want to do, because at the end of the day, the right people are going to be there. So that's
some of the people who get it.
Kind of how I'm rolling.
Do you know what the, I'm just looking, is he up there, Anthony Hopkins?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, he is.
Of course he is.
There's a whole...
He's got two pieces of mine.
Has he?
Yeah, he got one last year and one the year before. One this year, one year before.
Class actor getting
all the awards. Because he's amazing.
For the people watching, that's, you know, if you watch the vlog of the Oscars, that's what it's in relation to. But Tracy has got all of the actors, but
I've got my favourite actors. In fact, when I put them up, I only did this recently. I put all the pictures, the pictures of them up, and I sort of stepped back and I walked back into my studio and was like, oh my God, I am feeling so inspired right now because these people are. They have.
Well, what an achievement!
They've
though,
made
really.
It. Like they've reached the pinnacle of their.
And they
success.
Have your artwork.
And they have my artwork.
That's pretty cool.
So I was kind of like, oh my God, that's cool.
Yeah, like
I felt super excited by that.
You should
high
five yourself for that one.
Yeah, totally.
But it's true. Like it's a pretty cool feat, and it's a great achievement as well. So, excuse me, to know that it's out there, but then also you think about who these people know, and who else is going to see your art.
I know.
And people ask about that, so.
It's cool.
Very, very cool.
It's
indeed.
Very cool.
I wanted to. What are we up to now? I wanted to ask you. This is a tough question, so
I'm prepared.
It's almost unfair for me to ask you this.
Do it.
But I'm going to anyway because.
Because you will.
Because I'm going to do what
fearless
I want.
Fearless training. Well, how can you not?
It's my fucking podcast. Yeah. Do what I want.
Exactly.
What is like? Is there a particular? I'm going to word it differently. I was going to say, what's your favourite piece of art? But that's generic and it's hard to... Exactly. How could I ever get you to choose one? That's like saying, who's your favourite kid? It's not fair.
I could tell you a story about the favourite art. Anyway, carry on.
Okay. Yeah. Well, please do. But to rephrase it, what are the piece of artwork that you've created that have been the most iconic to you or had the most meaning to you? And if so, why? It could have been the time of your life that you were in and you created this piece or something that you always go back to and you're like, you'll never give this art away because it's just completely sentimental to you.
Yeah.
And there might not be.
No, and
I remember you telling me about how you, like me, have the great fascination with the sky.
Mm-hmm. I adore the sky.
And this is why I was like going around at the art show and I was like drawn to the ones which I thought in my mind's eye was more like the skies that I had seen. And I was like, I really like those ones. Yeah. I like the shiny elements and they had the blues in them, of course, right? So, yeah.
Okay. Yep. So the first piece is the one that's sitting on the wall over, you guys can't see it. We'll see if we can get a photo of it later. Mm-hmm. But it's the first painting as an adult.
Is that this one here?
Yeah. The first painting as an adult that I ever did. And I look at it and I refuse to change it. To touch it up, trust me, it needs it. Well, it needs it looking at it now.
Yeah, but that's probably why.
But that's why I refuse to touch it. I will always have it in my studio and it would be a reminder of where, I guess, a reminder of a change of my life, but more importantly, where we come from. We always start somewhere and we always are on a journey. And so that's a reminder of forever changing and growing, really.
For the people who are just listening, could you describe that painting?
It's supposed to be a frangipani flower
branch
with a really stormy sky background.
Which is quite cool.
Which is kind of cool, but it's, anyway, and it's brown, ivory, and magenta, which is, well, purple.
Look, the idea was there. The execution
was not quite so strong. But I love it. So, 15 years later, it will be with me forever. So that's the first one. One of the pieces that I don't really believe in regrets, but one that I wish I had kept was I did paint me and my husband, actually. It was a self-portrait. It was a couple of us making love, really. And it was all textured, and it was an outline, kind of like how she's outline.
Like a silhouette.
Yeah, like so I don't paint, obviously, in realism, so I prefer the illusion of something. So this couple, I literally had her leg being held up, and that was like against a wall. But what I did is I dripped all the legs away.
Out.
Yeah, so the bodies didn't finish. It was just dripped away.
It's like a memory almost.
Yeah, pretty much. It was super, super cool. Very textured, real, and it was all in really earthy tones. And I remember finishing and looking and going, that's awesome. And I sold it to a bank, Singapore, to a guy who ran a bank in Singapore. And I sold it very cheaply at the time. And I was talking to a friend of mine after, and she's like, why on earth did you sell that? So what do you mean? She said, that is like the beginning of your style. And she was right. And I didn't see it at the time. I knew it resonated with me really strongly, but I didn't realize at the time that that was exactly the epitome of how I paint now. So that was the beginning. The first piece wasn't the beginning. The first piece was me understanding who I was. That piece was like, holy shit, that's my style. So to this day, Mr. Bankman of Singapore, mwah, I hope you're still enjoying that painting. Because that painting's probably meant more to me than any of the others that I've done.
I wonder, just out of interest and perhaps fun, if you could track it down or track him down.
I'm sure I can. I've still got all his details.
It'd be cool to see like where it is and what it's hanging. Well, that's it. And you don't want to take,
I don't paint these for myself. I paint them for other people.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It would be almost like that painting's probably had so many memories for him that
of
it would
course.
Be kind of
I would never,
cruel to take that away.
I would never even think about that. But I have very fond memories.
It'd be nice to maybe see it again.
I would love
great
to see it
like
again.
To see, to,
I would
just,
love to
with
see it
your
again.
Own eyes and
And
just
I would
see
love to
it,
see if I still resonate it in the same way as what I do in my head with it now. I probably wouldn't, actually, because it was still only... It was a year and a half of me painting. So I'd only been painting literally for a year and a half when I sold it to him in Singapore. So it was kind of like, I'm sure I'd look at it now and go, oh, Trace, you could probably...
It looked better in my head, in my imagination.
But that's the point, right? That's the point. Why change
something? Well, it's like going back to the house that you grew up in.
Yeah.
And you go, fuck, I swear this was bigger.
So much. I don't remember that there. Yeah, exactly.
It's true. It's amazing.
Can't change what you've done.
No.
There's no point.
You idealise things in your mind.
Exactly.
I want to ask a bit of a left field question because I feel like you've talked about like greatest successes, and we can talk more about that with your painting accolades. But I like to talk about a funny one, entertaining one. You, like myself, are someone who gets yourself into some peculiar situations. It's fair to say, right? Yeah. You've met some interesting people. What are some memories with your art that has perhaps led you to a really funny event or something that's been the most, like, wow, astonishing event that's happened with your artwork over time? And I'm sure there's a few. Like, for example, you were painting something and someone walked in and something happened, or this, or it fell off a balcony. I don't know. But
I'm just that would be amazing.
Well, yeah, I'm just kind of like, you know, when it like fell through someone, you're like, done, that's the finishing touch.
I think one of the funniest things, and I had, you see this backing board behind here, right? Mm.
It's a monster, by the way.
It's a monster. I've got two of them, one on the other side, and they're 2 meters wide, and they obviously get covered just with shit, just excess paint when I'm painting.
They are themselves a painting.
Well, that's the story. I'd taken the painting I just finished down. I had a couple arrive and they were looking around at some of the pieces and he just stopped and went, oh my God, I love this. I'm like, love what? He's like, this piece, it's fantastic. Can you see the seven in there? Like, he described what he was seeing in the one on the other side of this backing board.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And I'm sitting there going, dude, how much wine he had? I said, would you like a glass? Anyway, the point is, he purchased my backing board.
He knew it was a backing board in the end?
In the end, he did. He wanted me to sign it, which I actually chose not to because I'd put no
energy
into this. Like, it was just my...
But you know what it could have been?
It was my leftovers.
It's the drabbles on the outskirts of your energy.
It was
still your energy.
It was just my leftovers. And, literally. Anyway, so yeah, he purchased my backing board, which was most really interesting. Cool. And what did result from that, though, was a very interesting discussion on social media because he was so proud of this piece. Mm. And other people were like, that's a crock of shit. Like, that's terrible. Why would you even buy that? So that was also, it was interesting for me to read because I realized at that point that I am not responsible for what people think of my artwork. And art is so subjective. So
it's exactly what I was just going to say, Tracy. Art is so subjective.
So subjective.
And it's like music. What some people consider shit, some people love, and people must love it because it exists.
And I wanted to say that you're talking about interesting experiences. I was at an event last Friday, which I was one of the key sponsors for. It was a charity organisation.
Yes.
And we were raising funds, their first event for them. Sorry, people. And prior to me going up and talking, I was standing on the side of the stage and there was these four women sitting there and they were chatting away and they're like, so this art piece, this one that's been specially created, and one of the ladies, I fell for her after, but anyway, I let it go. No, I let it go.
Oh,
she's like,
great.
Is that it? And they were like, yeah. One of them said, I like it. She's like, it's terrible. Like, oh my God, what was that person thinking? And I was standing right behind
her. I love that.
And I was like, oh, you poor love. She had no idea who I was. And then shortly after that, literally, I was called up on stage, did my thing, walked out, and she just looked at me and she was like, and I could have rescued her, but I was like, I really didn't care. And I probably should have rescued her, actually, because you could see she felt absolutely destroyed that she had been so overtly blunt about how horrible the art was.
You either got to own it and be like, to the person, if someone goes, well, that's my work, and go, look, well, if it is, I mean, no disrespect, but that,
and
I do
would
think
have
it's
said
shit
to her. That's cool because someone's just paid significantly.
Yeah, and
for
then
that.
You would have been like, "That's cool. I'm
okay with it."
Yeah, because not everyone's gonna like my work, no. And I think like that says a lot about a person. Mm. So you have to be willing as an artist or someone who creates, like a creator. Let's say these days, right?
Yeah,
a creative, because that kind of encapsulates it all. Not everyone's gonna be for you, but you said it before, and that's the key thing. That's what I was going to say. No, it was something else that I wanted to come back to before. I know, I've remembered now. No, it was because it was really good as well.
Of course.
If I did say so myself. We always look at our own
of
critics.
Course.
But it's a great polarizing tool to be yourself, to be your true self. Because
so much. And to say what you want to say.
Well, you cut out the waste, though.
Yeah,
I mean,
you do.
And
you do.
It, I mean, I think maybe some people get that from the get-go, but you get to a place in your life, you know, as people, I don't give a fuck anymore. It's kind of that paraphrase, but it's not.
But it's more than that.
Yeah, but it's not that exactly. Yeah. It's just now you know who you are and you're like, you figured out that you've tried to people please that long. You've tried to do things you
don't
want to
do.
Not
going to do that way anymore.
And you're not happy anyway. So no. You might as well bloody do what you want to do. And yeah. You quickly disseminate the people that don't need to be there. And you will start, people will go, I always use the example of color as well. And I say, you know, I'm over here and I say, so I like blue, right? And certain people are going to be like, I like blue too. I like that blue. I want a blue.
Oh, in your camp.
Yeah, I want to do that. And then some people are like, no, I like red. And that's great. But if you don't kind of, not that you have to necessarily, you know, build a cult following or anything like that, but you want to find people that you enjoy hanging around with.
Of course.
And that value you for who you are. And the best way to do that is to be who you really want to be.
Authentically yourself.
Yeah, truly yourself, though.
It's like when you see me trip up this on stage, or you see me, that's what happens. Or you see me I nearly ripped my dress at my event, but, you know, we hot glued it back together, so it's all good.
It's all good.
It's what happens,
it's there.
Right?
It's fine.
Yeah. I'll be the person who walks into the wall and forget that the wall was there in front of everybody else, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's authentically
it's
you.
Fully. It's why I've broken my nose twice.
Oh, you actually have?
Yeah, actually.
Oh, Jesus. I thought you walked into a wall. I didn't think you
did
that.
No, I had to.
Oh, really?
Twice. Yeah.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, it was quite funny.
Yeah. I mean, focus on little things.
Oh, I don't. And that's interesting in itself, too, because you're talking about being grounded with bare feet. The more I paint, the less I see just the little things. But walls aren't little things, but they just automatically just jump up in front of me. I don't know how it happens.
Who put that there?
Pretty much. And Wayne is so used to seeing it, he's just like, oh, shit, what have you done now?
Oh,
yeah. Because
there's red on the painting. Mm, it's blood.
I
reckon he could
off.
Up the value.
Yeah, I think so too.
It's got your DNA on it. So if anything, that's real blood. That blood, sweat and tears,
literally, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What about the future of your painting? Where would you like to go? Do you have any specific visions, any specific goals, or are you very open to the whole amalgamation of a natural journey?
To a point, but you still have to create your own way. Mm-hmm. You know, you can always say, this is what I want, but at the end of the there is some goals that I have, and one of them is very much about being able to have multiple markets. This is very business focused, I guess. I'll get to the personal in a second. But business wise, having multiple sectors of the market being able to enjoy my work. So we have our unique pieces that are one off and are priced accordingly. And there is my commission work, which is even more special because I'm painting it just for you and no one else is ever going to get them again or ever get it. Mm. So what I am working on now is about to be releasing a range of prints that are based around the Hollywood work that I've done. So that's exciting. So watch the space. That'll happen within the next week to 2 weeks. That's imminent. And then I would do want to move into homewares as well. So where we are investigating that at the moment.
Are we talking like in
like prints onto products?
Oh, yeah, that would be
so. So it's just kind of cool. And then all of a sudden that allows me to have multiple sectors of the market being able to enjoy pieces of art that I've created.
And help more people, because more people will see it.
Absolutely,
sit on it, touch
and that's
it,
what it's
feel
about.
It.
And get excited.
You don't really touch
it.
A paint on a wall. Well, I'm sure there's people out there who do. But I mean, you know, if you're sat on a couch with the artwork on, you're more connected to it.
All the time, with
arguably.
Colour. With colour. No, with colour you are. No, that's true.
I'm just.
And what I find interesting, even when people look at my work, like you can see it online, but people love coming to see it in person because they want to do this all the time. Want to touch it.
We are kinesthetic.
We are.
But
so,
you do, you paint with a lot of texture though.
Yes, I do, which is why homewares works.
Which is what I've noticed about your paintings.
They draw you in because you want to touch them. Mm. So homewares works, like a throw or a cushion works perfectly for me because of the texture, because it's the same thing.
Yeah.
So that's part
that's
of the
exciting.
Plan. Yeah. Obviously, we do want to continue to expand more internationally as well. That's a massive goal for me.
Yeah.
So we are investigating various galleries that we will be able to hopefully get some representation through as we continue to grow. Personally, I actually have this really strong desire to be even more immersed in a creative space and less immersed in anything else. I want to paint. I keep saying I just want to paint. It's not just is the wrong word. I want to in every part of me, just be immersed. I've just said just again, immerse myself in creating 24/7,
yeah,
as much as I can. Mm. And having my friends pull me out and go, Trace, come and have a wine. You got to.
Yeah.
That's
it's all right. I've already had a Bailey's.
Yeah, exactly. Full bottle. Exactly. So yeah. So sorry about that. So I want to expand what I'm creating and how I'm creating, and the only way for me to do that is to be fully immersed in it.
Yeah. And I think that is the case with most people that mm-hmm. truly want to transcend or reach what I would interpret as full actualization. Like, you have to, it has to be everything. Like, if you truly love, if you truly want to be that good at something, like, it has to be everything you do for the most part.
And not even for the most part. It does. David Bromley, coming back to him again. He on his website, him and his wife, he says they get joked all the time that they're workaholics. They don't see it that way.
No,
they are immersed in their creativity. A successful businessman, they're immersed in their business.
Well, they are.
That's their business. That's kind of
how you know what you're doing. And there's a couple of like really key things for the listeners here if you really you dig out the gold in this, because that is kind of the elixir to freedom and happiness, where I've tried to devise a question to get people to figure out what their muse is. And it's, as ever, starting with the end in mind, because what people don't realize is people often go after materialistic things, right? Or a vision that they think they want because perhaps other people want or they're meant to want. And I said, well, create that vision in your mind and imagine, you know, you live, and I'm not going to go into too detail because I've said this a few times, but like, you know, you imagine like you've got everything that you want. Like, just imagine it, but you've really got to sit with it and imagine that you do have it. The car, the money, the watches, the wife, the husband, whatever it is you want, you've really got to vision it. But then what do your days look like? Like, really get granular with it, because that is the thing. Because what happens is, say if you win the lottery tomorrow, people, they have this like, yeah, they buy the car and they travel, but eventually the novelty will wear off. And what do you do day to day? You will still paint
forever.
I will still go to the gym, learn about the gym, create stuff about movement, the body. Yeah. Like, I'm obsessed with it. I love it. And it's like, that's the thing. And you can look at the journey and you sort of sometimes go, fuck it, maybe with yourself, you know, you do all these things that are so close to the thing, but you're not doing the thing, and you just got to do the goddamn thing.
I fall into that trap a lot. And I think when you're running a business, it's a challenge because, call me a control freak, but I think I call it myself a creative freak because business is creating. So I don't want to let go completely of that, right?
Correct.
But I need to stop doing the thing.
But then I'm now not guilty of it because I go, as long as I'm like looking after myself and I'm not going backwards, you know, I look at other jobs where I'd work the same hours and I fucking hated it. And guess what I'm doing at the end of the day? I'm going to train, or I'm learning about nutrition, or I'm reading something. Like, why the whole time was that? And I was doing training, but I wasn't doing it full time.
That's right.
You know, I was always like, oh, I need money to build this.
So like, that's the trap, right? The thing for me is creating.
That is the trap.
The trap is all the trimmings around that from a business standpoint. And I've been spending the last month since my event doing very little of this and lots of business, which is great, but it's not.
No, because you want to do the creation.
This is me. Yeah. So yes, I think I was talking to a financial planner in January and he said, how do you see your life in 5 years? I was like, dude, doing what I'm doing now. He's like, what, you don't want anything else? Like, he's talking money, houses, whatever. And I'm like, sometimes I go, yes, I really do. But at my core, I really don't. As long as I have enough to paint, to create, to you walk in the door, oh my God, I freaking love that. It's like, this is me. That's my fulfillment. I don't need anything else. So you can essentially say we've actually gotten to that point. Now it just needs to be more of it.
And so exciting.
But it is, isn't it? Because who knows where we'll be. Come and talk to me again in 5 years' time. Holy moly, we could be, I don't know. I don't care, as long as you're still painting. Yeah.
Drunk with bare feet.
Yeah. Someone said to me, what's your retirement plan? I'm like, you're looking at it.
I should have brought the Baileys.
I don't believe in retirement.
No, it's not going to happen. That's boring, though. And you know, not everyone unfortunately, which saddens me, will find their thing. But
it saddens me too.
Because I do wish everyone could kind of experience that, because I do feel like people spend their whole life in searching this game, just chasing rainbows and carrots. And I mean, even though I'm still relatively young,
but then again, not, you know, maybe they're not ready to see it.
Well, that's the thing, because there's never, I don't think it's ever too late.
No.
But I also think that you've got to, you know, you kind of got to be open to, there's got to be a gap of some sort where you can kind of go, yeah, actually, there is something calling me, there's something different, but we overlook it. It was a quote the other day.
It's always talking to you, just need to hear it.
Yeah, but we're so distracted and connected and hooked up, and sometimes it's like, what is the thing that you would do no matter what? Like, what's the thing you're always going to come back to when money's not an issue, when time's not an issue? That's the thing. And then people go, well, that's all well and good, Alex, but how do I make a living? Right? And I'm like, well...
And no, I get that. That's correct. That's where your balance has got to come in.
Exactly. But you still need to move towards that, right?
You so...
Because it's not like you woke up and just went, cool, I'm going to quit everything and paint and fucking make
and
money.
And that's it.
And the same with personal training and, you know, just coaching and building the YouTube and the podcast. I didn't just one day wake up and go, fucking hell, boom, I'll quit everything else and that'll be it.
I had a total realism moment, because I had 6 months of... When I had quit and gone, fuck it, that's me. 6 months of painting because I can. And it was amazing. And then all of a sudden, it was like, shit, wait a minute. I've actually got to make some money now.
Fuck.
Yeah. So this had
the rent is due.
I had to become a thing. It had to become, it always was going to be my business plan. Mm. But I was super excited about being immersed in what it was that I loved. And I want to say, too, that... So people might be listening going, oh my God, well, I'm not creative. I'm not this. I don't love something like that, like you just said. Mm. But if what you love is getting out of bed and going to work as a barista in your coffee shop because you love the smell of the coffee, or it doesn't have to be a big thing.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be
grandiose. It has to be, if your life, my dad loves fishing. And he would be very content living in a tin shed next to a river. And there is no judgment based around that, because what I love to see is that when he is fishing, he's living his passion. So if your passion is going fishing every other weekend with your mates and having a beer, and you consistently do that and that fulfills you, bring it on. Then you've found your thing. Things doesn't have to be, your bright doesn't have to be huge.
Mm. I think that is a salient point, though, because a lot of people think it has to be, like, I need a brand, I need a label, I need a business. I always use
You just have to fulfill your heart.
Well, you do. And I always use the example of a gentleman I met at Good Life many years ago when I was a membership consultant, and he was like, man, I tell you what, speaking of colour, he used to wear the tie-dye stuff.
Oh, yeah.
He had dreadlocks, like full creative, man. And I just like, I see people like that in life and I usually just hone straight in on them. I'm like, this guy's going to be fucking cool and interesting. And I'm quite eccentric.
Would never have guessed.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know. What gave it away? I mean, back in the day, though, when I told you about this.
Maybe the gold paint might have given it away.
You're like, well, why would you do something like that? I fucking love it. Why wouldn't I do something like that? You know, dressing up. Or dressing down, in this
dressing
case.
Dressing down.
Dressing down and dress up. And I said to him, you know, I just got chatting to him and I asked him what he did. And in the summary, he says, I travel the world, I surf, and that's it. And he was, fuck. And you could tell he was just happy, man. He was just like.
He's joyous.
Content.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. And I'm like, what do you do for money? He's like, I'd get a job in a bar or whatever. And he's like, and I just save
and
up.
And carry on surfing.
Yep. Save up. And he's like, and I just surf again for as long as I can. And when I need money, I just get another job.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what do you plan on it? He's like, nah, I just have a couple of boards. He's like, I'll just stay wherever I can stay, eat whatever I can eat. And I'm just like, and part of me's going.
It's like the best life ever.
Yeah. Part of me's going, I wish I could be that carefree. And then the other part of me is like,
it's not your personality either.
No, and I can't force that. And I think people shouldn't try to be something or not. But I was like, oh, but what about a house and finance? What about your future? And I'm just like, this guy doesn't give a fuck. He doesn't have two pennies. He's the happiest, one of the happiest people I've ever met.
But if you're an overthinker, I'm a bit of an overthinker.
Yeah, I'd be.
There's no way in the world I could live like that. But what we can learn is the thing that we need that you can immerse yourself in to stop the thinking. Yours is obviously exercise. Mine's so not. Elicits that. Mm. No, just kidding. Mine is this. My right biceps in really good condition.
Sip on your wine and Baileys in between. Well, no, technically, though, there's a lot of fine motor skills going on all over the paintwork.
So much.
Do you know what I mean? I wanted to ask, before my final question, I wanted to ask some rapid-fire questions, a bit more fun, a bit more lighthearted. I've got some specifically for you, which I think would be good. And this one is a bit of a curve.
Should I be scared?
Very afraid. The if this is okay, this is going to be a bit. Try and answer it quickly. I mean, only because I just want the initial, not because we're out of time. As much time as possible. This is long form content. If you could create a tool that doesn't exist or a color that doesn't exist in art, and what I'm getting at is there some sort of paintbrush that you'd invent that you would love to use, or a technique and or a color that you do not believe exists that you would love to have? Or some sort of medium. Like, for example, imagine if you could paint with like neon light, and maybe you can, but
you
I don't.
You kind of can.
Yeah, you probably can. So.
You can, that's a really tough question because you can create with whatever.
Luminous. I know, it's difficult.
That is.
Because even I'm trying to struggle, but I'm just like, have you ever been doing something and go, Gwen, I wish I could have a paintbrush that's shaped like this, or I wish I could have something that made that texture or that colour. Like,
no, because I find it.
Well, that's what I mean.
I know. If I need to use my fingers, I'll use it. If I need to use sand, I've used eggshell, I've used cardboard, you name it, I've used it.
That's
so
very cool.
You go, and I guess one thing I could say about that is like the tool would be being able to turn a switch on that allows you to play instantly, because creativity is all about playing.
Yeah.
And as adults, we've forgotten how to play. We're taught that it's not fun to play. It's not responsible, to play. And kids are bloody good at it.
Oh, I love playing.
And you want to be inspired in terms of creativity. Look at kids, and they instantly have that switch on. So if there is a tool to be able to just turn that switch on, that would be perfect.
Love it. That is great. That's
playing's good.
Yeah, it is. And apparently a playful mood instigates that things are moving in the right direction. And you're generally in a great
mood. Of course, because you're in a joyous
you're in a great mood. If you're playful, that's a good sign you're in a good state of mind.
Yep. Why do you think it's so addictive? Why do you think creative people love being in that state all the time? Because you feel constantly awesome.
Well, it's like when you were a kid, you just like... Well, you didn't, but you could just be fascinated for hours with just the basic stuff.
The first time you take a step, the first time you touch something, and we've forgotten what it feels like for first times for things. If we're playing, who would have thought that would put eggshell on a canvas?
Well,
you know.
Well, this is exactly right.
It just happens.
I always go to, there's a big kids play area. We used to have in England called like Charlie Chalk Chalks and Wacky Warehouse. They're not here for apparently red tape reasons, but Narang have kind of got one out at the gym, but I'm talking like a massive kids, like ball pool slides, it's got all the stuff in. And I openly admit all the time, and people think I'm joking, I'm like, I want to fucking go in there. And they're like, what? I'm like, I want to run and dive into that ball
pit. Especially because you're so focused
I just want to like just climb all over that. Because if I see a tree, I'm like, I must climb it.
If I saw a puddle of mud, I'd jump in it.
There you go.
Because it's the same, it's different but same. Yeah. Like, what's going to happen? What
texture.
Patterns are going to make?
Yeah,
that feels funny.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's just you want to get immersed in it.
Yeah,
which it comes back to, which is interesting. If you could invite three people to dinner, dead or alive, who would those three people be? Might be some of these people on the wall here.
None, actually.
No, okay.
If I had the choice, I would invite my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And this sounds so cliche. No, my God, my dad, my husband, and my grandmother.
That's great. There was only one other guest in what is now 85 episodes over 2 years that has given me an answer where they've invited their family to dinner.
Really?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Well, my husband's my best mate, and you know he challenges me all the time.
Yeah.
And
he's a great guy, Wayne.
He's a pain in the ass, but when he's not at the same time,
it's a man
who's
got a life-size Darth Vader outfit. Just saying, so
he does.
Have to get
does.
That in there because I love that. He'll come in dressed as a stormtrooper. No.
No, during COVID, he did the bin challenge, and he was Darth Vader, and he did like the movie.
Good.
Anyway, yes, that's him.
So, good.
So he's so practical and so not like me. So and he's my best friend. So of course I'd have him at dinner. We laugh. He makes me laugh, so that's cool.
Love it.
My dad, because he is like, he calls me Tuppence, right? And I remember this vividly. At 48, I'm still Tuppence. Anyway, we were getting ready to move over here, and he's like, had a few drinks, and he's like, Tuppence, I love you, but I just don't fucking get you. And I'm like, Trev, I don't fucking get you either. And it was like, I would invite him because he's so real. And like I said before, he lives his life the way he chooses. And I have a lot of respect for that.
Yeah, he's fishing and he's doing his thing.
Yeah, and my grandmother, because I just remember so much love coming from her. And it was unconditional love. That's what it felt like. So it would be worthwhile seeing if that's the case. She's beautiful. She was a beautiful soul from what I can remember. So there you go.
I'm sure it'd be a lovely meal. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. My last rapid-fire question would be, if you could offer a piece of advice for people to do every day, mm-hmm. That would improve their life, it could be something we've talked about today, or it could be something completely unrelated, what piece of advice would you offer them to do?
Stop your negative talk of yourself and stop listening to other people. Two of the hardest things in the world to do, but two of the most essential things in the world to do for you to live a joyous, happy life.
Love it. Mm. That's great. And my last question, which is the question I ask all my guests, the question we land on. It's People always say to me, give me a script. I'm like, I don't want to give you a script. I'll tell you what I want to talk about. But scripts. I mean, I'm talking about you. So you should know about you and what you do and what you love. So let's keep it real.
Mm. I agree.
Right. So could you identify a fear that you've had in your life? Can be big or small. What it is, if you're still overcoming it, and if you have overcome it, what you learned from that particular fear. And again, it can be something super small, it could be public speaking, it is for a lot of people, and it could be an event, it could be a time in your life, it could be years ago, could have been recent, could be in the future, but...
That's such an easy question.
Go.
Not being good enough.
Oh, I love it.
I've always had a fear of not being enough, actually, not even good enough, not being enough. So no matter what I did, no matter what I tried, I was always, always fearful that I was never going to be. Like, I remember at 10 years old, we sat a maths test, and I remember being at school in tears with my teacher. And she's like, what's wrong? I was like, I failed. I got 78%. So for me, that was a complete failure. For a lot of people, that would be okay. Am I over it? No. Will I ever be? I don't think so, because I think it's part of what keeps me, I was going to say grounded, but probably what keeps me humble. Mm. But the difference now is that used to drive me and it used to lead all my behaviours and dictate my behaviours. Now I see it for what it is and go, hey, put your freaking head in and just be yourself. So for the difference now is that when I hear it and I see it, I pull it back into rein. Mm. So I'm more able to let go of that and go, fuck, just get on stage and do what you need to do, or just pick up the brush and do what you need to do.
Mm. Yeah, that resonates incredibly well. I'm smiling because that is almost the same answer every single person I've had on a podcast.
Are you serious?
In some way, listen to the podcast. There's about one or two people, and I've said they're the only person who's not said this. And I think someone said it was public speaking or something. And I kind of sort of, but I said that, and I think they just jumped onto it. But most of the people I get on are very strong-minded, they're very unique, they're very talented, they're very driven in some way, shape, or form, they're very passionate. I generally gravitate towards these people, and I generally want to speak to them because I know they've got something valuable to share, and I like to unpack their stories. And I recognize this pattern probably about, I'd say maybe 25 episodes in, I'm like, hang on a minute. I went back and I listened in and I'm like, yeah, sure enough. And sure enough, it might be a different verbiage, but it's the same thing.
Yeah.
And what I figured is, I'm like, this is interesting. Because I figured by doing these podcasts, I've almost created, and this is not why I did it, an education for myself. I've created my own university because I'm like learning from these people from all walks of life.
Who have done all these different
and
things.
And it's just such an eclectic mix. And I'm like, wow, there's so much. And I really enjoy these conversations because that's why I have them, because it's great. I want to pass it on and inspire other people, but I'm interested in people. I like talking to people. Never would have guessed, right? Don't shut up. But
even when he was being painted.
Exactly. It did not the whole time. And Jess can attest to that one as well. But
I'm the same as well.
But it's good and it flows. And I just started to figure, I'm like, hang on a minute. Everyone's kind of got this. And it's one of my biggest fears as well. And you could argue it's my biggest fear. And they say in some way, shape or form. And I think that's what keeps people like us doing the good work we do.
Of course.
Because you kind of add a bit of an adjunct onto that, which I really like. Because I feel like I've been at a bit of a crossroads as of the past 6 months where, you know, I've always struggled with feeling I'm not enough, or I'm not good enough, or I need to be this and I need to be that for whatever reason. It's not like I have a bad upbringing or anything, but I've always felt like that. Bit of an outcast, traveling, living in New Zealand, going there when I was young, moving here, all this sort of stuff. But then I sort of thought, as of like, you need to kind of, that's good, and you need a bit of that, because I think it keeps you driving.
It does.
It keeps you, it's your like your true north. It's your daily dose of reality, mm-hmm. is what mm-hmm. I sort of.
As long as it doesn't overtake you.
Correct.
Or stop you.
But when it does, which I think it has in the past, and you said it
and
then,
me too.
I really like that, because that really connected with me. You said, I felt like it drove a lot of, and I
it did.
Feel like that's.
It drove everything about my life for a long time.
Yeah. I feel like
not
it's.
Not now.
Disrupted a lot of mine in the past, because I look back and go, I had it, but I didn't believe. And I let the fact that I didn't believe create a bad performance, whether I was playing football, you know, and it got to me, it got in my head, and I decided to believe that verbiage where I was like, oh, hang on a minute.
Think about all these people around this room, right?
Yeah.
A lot of celebrities and a lot of the actors. And when you really drill down behind what it is about who they are, so many of them have the same fears and the same insecurities as every single one of us, either listening or us sitting right here. The difference is they have not allowed that to stop them. They've not allowed other people's opinions of them to stop their abilities to grow and doing what they want to do. So we have the choice.
Correct.
We have the choice. We can let our fear of not being enough, whatever reason that is, cripple us and go, no, I need to live this life because that's what's going to fit in and that's what's going to make people love me or whatever it is for you. Or just go, nah, sorry, hear ya, but not listening.
Absolutely.
And do your own thing.
Couldn't agree more. And I think that's an appropriate way to end what I think has been a very, very creative
right, onto
and
the Baileys.
Insightful conversation. Straight into it. But before we do have a Baileys, and perhaps some of the guests will join us, I know some of you will, you definitely will. Where can people, because people, you're going to leave them wanting more, Tracy. Where can people find more about you? Where can they follow your work? And obviously I'll put all the links in, as always. Or is there any places you want to direct people if they want to find out more about that, or they want to, you know, see your art?
Look, obviously all the social channels you would expect. That's a bit of a given. But I do a lot of, all of my work, both current and past, is on my website. I use my website more as a... I guess it's a profiling, really. So if people want to find out about me, go there. I'm happy to pick up the phone and talk to people whenever. And of course, people can come to my studio. We have an open studio, open door policy here. So you just let me know you want to come over and come and hang. We can do that. And as we continue to develop and grow, as I said before, we are looking at wanting to have relationships with galleries everywhere. So as they continue to come online, you'll be able to see all of them also from where on my site. So if you're in Sydney, I can say, yeah, head down to these people or whatever. And of course, my clients, believe it or not, some of them may or may not be watching, but if you are scrolling through my socials and you go, oh my God, I know that person, go talk to them, go see them, and you'll see my work and see what I'm about through there.
Absolutely. I love it. And as always, guys, I'll put the links to those channels in the show notes below. And Tracy, thank you again for your time.
Anytime.
I appreciate it. I've really enjoyed it. It's been really insightful, especially the colour therapy. That was very cool. Very cool indeed. And for all of you who are tuning in, thank you as ever for listening. I will ask, guys, I've said this before, but I know a lot of you are listening in. So if you're not subscribed and you've not left a rating and a review, and it is safe to do so when you're not driving, head over. You just scroll to the bottom. It's really easy on iTunes, Spotify, all of those channels. And of course, if you are on YouTube, remember to like. It helps the channel grow. If you really liked it, share it with someone who you think will also like it. Takes a second, really helps it out. Pay it forward. And of course, guys, remember to subscribe, hit that bell icon for weekly videos. And of course, until the next episode, stay fearless.
See ya.